Hi, and welcome to OzBuzz, where we interview and have the privilege of interviewing exciting and successful and eclectic people in and around the real estate umbrella. And today we have a gentleman with us as some 30 years in urban planning, kind of related experience in his spearheaded real estate developments throughout the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island and Alberta, and even as far away as Ontario. And he's been 15 years on the board of the Urban Development Institute, the chair of the Downtown Business Association, Downtown VAN, I guess it's called now. I'm a member there as well. But I'm just a basic member kind of guy, not the chair, right? So it was some real one. But we also is the board member of the Royal Columbian Hospital Foundation, a vice chair of Provincial Health Service Authority, obviously a list of successes. And welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the introduction, Oz. Thank you.
Well, the interesting thing is there's so much change happening in the housing industry. I mean, I've been in this business like you for many, many years. I don't like to say how many years I've been in business and say, what, how old is this guy, right? But yeah. Anyways, the thing
you're
is...
Like, you're the Ozzy Osbourne of real estate.
then I could have a home show. Anyways, yeah. The point is the change is happening in the housing industry. How did we get there?
If there was a sort of an easy answer to this question, there would be an easy solution to the problems that we have. The quick answer would be that it's a problem that's been 20 years in the making. I would say since the sort of big real estate boom, housing boom, globally in the early 2000s, it's been a ride sort of in Vancouver that has continued. So it's been two decades in the making. That's sort of the first comment to answer. And it was escalating markets, you know, as a whole. There were ups and downs, but the market continued to, to escalate over two decades. And policy that was sort of driven in an escalating market. So if you expect that in perpetuity, your policy that is written, zoning, guidelines, plans, is based on that. And so that collides with a pandemic, a pending global recession, a housing industry that is facing some incredible challenges. So when the bottom falls out, it really falls out.
Pandemic had a huge impact.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you take a look at our previous pandemic, there were a number of things that happened in 1920 that are very similar to happening now. There were great things like the Roaring Twenties and coming out of a pandemic and people wanting to get together again. And at that time, it was swing dancing and jazz
Charleston
music, clubs, Charleston, all of that stuff. And we were thrilled to be coming out of the pandemic and just to see people again. So from a social side, from a socializing side, it seemed like things were going to be positive. But there's a lot of like civic urban tension that came out of the last pandemic. Is very similar to now with migration, people moving within cities from one part to another. For example, here it's moving from the core out into more suburban areas. At that time, people were moving into the cities looking for work and employment and a better work environment. There's a bit of a different phenomenon going on right now. You know, this is pandemic 1920 and how it's not exactly the same, but it sure does rhyme what we're going through right now. Very similar to 100 years ago. So like you put in a post-pandemic economy and post-pandemic cities and the amount of change that was already going on because we were in a digital technological revolution already. As our fifth economic revolution, it means a lot of change to our cities.
And the government is trying to make a change there by forcing the municipalities to put the official community plan. And now this is the year, right? They announced it last year, but by the end of the year, not only do they have to deal with how to handle single family homes with sixplexes, but a whole official community plan. How do you, as a consultant and a planner, how do you advise the municipality what they should do?
There are municipalities that I would say are flexible and understand that they need some flexibility and they need to move quickly. I would say Burnaby is a great example that has done that. They've adopted the TOA provincial legislation, the multiplex legislation, ahead of everybody else. There's others who have not.
Just quickly tell us what TOA stands for.
Yeah, TOA is transit oriented areas where the province has set in minimum heights and densities in around transit.
And maybe so, no parking or needed or well.
Yeah, it's a number of things that municipalities would probably still need to figure out, but there are parking, density, height, and a few other big items that the province came to intervene. So the OCPs, right, are going to be adopted. They are required to be changed to accommodate these provincial regulations and provincial bills. Some are going to accept them, like I just mentioned, and some may try and find some workarounds to accept a part of them. We'll see what happens at the end of the year. It's a game changer for our industry for something like this to happen. Other states and jurisdictions around the world have done this before successfully, and I'm hopeful that it will be. But it's a big change coming to our industry end of the year.
So what do you think the cities are heading to in the next decade?
Let's not look at 10 years out, but let's look at it in maybe 2-3 year chunks. Over the next 10 years, we will rebound. I hope we're not headed to our terrible 30s like they did 100 years ago,
yeah,
and a Great Depression where the stock market crashed after escalating artificially about 20% a year for six years. Our cities are going to have great strain over the next 2 years. The optimism that we had coming out of a pandemic and with everything that's going on around the world, there's just pessimism in the market, pessimism in national security, pessimism in international trade. That is going to take a little while to sort out. Hope the dust settles sooner than later. So that's in the short term. Over the medium term, things do rebound. Wish I had a crystal ball. It's my own crystal ball, which isn't a real one. But if there was a real one, I'd be able to hope that the hardship is followed by great success. So that's the short term.
I think the points that you're making, the pandemic and the stresses on, but it's also the kind of people are becoming. I look at my grandchildren, they're all in driving age. They don't want a car. They want to be living in town, actually, and they're quite happy to take the bus. They know the bus routes intimately, which I don't even know the inside of a bus. And so there's a difference. Be seniors as well are coming on stream in ever increasing amounts. By 2041, we're going to be 1 in 4 seniors is a senior. 1 in 4 people is a senior.
Yeah, so the changes to our cities. I was talking from a regulatory environment and from an economic, from a demographic standpoint, Oz. There's great change coming. Like very rapid change coming to our cities. So if there's one thing that I want to communicate, like what's happening over the next decade, rapid change. So it's not just something we consider from a housing regulatory environment. The foundation of our cities is people. And there's a huge demographic shift in our people. Millennials are the largest economic power in our cities in North America. They are now becoming a political power. So you take that and an aging population of boomers turning into seniors, we are living longer. So that our sort of physical health is better. Brain health is something I think that is going to be studied a lot over the next 10 years.
That's good news for me.
Yeah. So yeah, probably both of us. I'm sure we have family members that'll tell us that Oz and Gary both have a bit of brain damage. I guess that needs to be remedied.
But you're so right. I mean, and that's why like places like UBC come up with this a new generation squeeze, where they literally blame the old people by making it, squeezing the young people out of the housing market and want to create equity taxes and whatnot. And so the governments are wrestling with all of these kind of things. Now, you're right in the middle of it, and you're advising the city, or you're advising the developers, you know, what to need to do.
Yeah, we're advising both. Well, you asked a question earlier about, you know, what advice do I give, or when I'm speaking with cities, like the status quo is not working. And like the policies we had in place, the plans we had in place over the last 10 years are not working either. Like they have not been entirely successful, probably in bits and pieces and parts. But if they were great policies that were looking out ahead, they would have foreshadowed and foreseen this housing crisis and been able to think ahead instead of trying to fix problems from the past. So we're so far behind, and we're still fixing our policy, urban policy issues from the past, that we need to be able to look forward. That's the part, and you can hear it in my voice, that puts great strain on me. There is a cliff coming. We can all see it. We're headed towards it around seniors housing. There is not enough built. And I know firsthand, with my mom falling ill and looking for a care facility for her, how quickly her health deteriorated and how difficult it was for us to find housing. And I'm very concerned about that generation of seniors and the care and thought that is being put into all types of housing for them. We've certainly focused in on renters and millennials and that sort of middle part of housing, with this huge demographic shift around seniors coming and the fact that as a whole, life expectancy is longer. Very concerned about who's going to look after our parents' generation.
Well, that's really important also on a design level. You know, I mean, you know, we have to take a look. Where do these people live? How much space do they need? What do you consider? How do you handle that?
So if you look at millennials and seniors as being the two big markets emerging over the next decade, their housing needs are very different, right? Incredibly different. You have adaptability for seniors, which is absolutely required. I know that from my mom's experience. And you have millennials that are either on their own or a couple or a young family and starting their families here. So one is growing up as a family, and the other is sort of winding down as empty nesters and as seniors. So there has to be thought given to both. There is a lot of space requirements required for seniors when it comes to accessibility. I get it. First-hand experience, I get it. And there needs to be an equal amount of effort put into designing both. I don't know the answer, but someone's going to have to figure this out, because we have to accommodate both emerging demographics.
And yes, you point out the senior isn't like the little old guy on a stick and the little old lady knitting in a chair. They're active. For that, I have a lot of people that are well into their 70s, and you look at their daytime table as to they go to walk and they go to swim, they're doing this, they're meeting people. You know, we have one realtor friend of mine, Corina Stainsby, and she actually says a lot of those seniors, they don't want to downsize. They want to upsize, but upsize in lifestyle and maybe live somewhere where there's a pool or where there's events happening and so on.
Absolutely. Their families have grown up. And their social networks are changing. People are retiring at 70. They're working well into their 60s. You know, the era of 55, 60 for retiring
it's a new 35 or the 55.
Yeah, it is. And 70 is the new 60 is the new 50. So there's a different social part of it, for sure, in another community. I agree with you As someone who is going to have to start thinking about retirement, and my son who would be grown up, and what does that mean for people of our generation, for sure. And I think it is more than just your physical housing needs is going to be that social interaction.
Well, I would suggest in your business, you have sort of the double whammy. You have a demographic shift. You have a government that is constantly in need of money and blaming the development industry. Well, that's my view. I'm not putting words in your mouth.
Yeah.
But you have to understand the political end of the business as well. And that's where your expertise comes in. I mean, the policy, the public hearings, the land use. Now, I know the government brought in last year fewer public hearings. Is that correct?
Yeah, ideally, yeah. OCP compliant projects are not required to go through public hearings, and so some municipalities have adopted that. There's ways around it. Like, I would really hate it if OCPs were just become very basic documents,
mm-hmm.
and that everything still has to go through a rezoning. That's not the expectation of what the provincial government wants. It's also not the expectation of what people who need housing, what they're looking for. Having said all of that, I talked earlier about millennials being a big economic force and becoming a big political force. They're showing up in droves, unannounced, at public hearings and public meetings, and are very organized, very motivated, super educated, very connected. A huge force. Our generation has always made fun of them, but they're I think completely onto something here with the power that they have. So I would expect a quantum shift coming in that process. And if those who are in need of the housing want to streamline process, they need to continue that noise they're making and a political demand to move things faster. It is inherently a political process to get major housing projects approved. It just is. And something has to give, because it's adding a lot of time. We just need to create more certainty so that housing can be built faster. The multiplex legislation is it going to come in and be built everywhere over the next decade? No. But is it going to become a thing and a player in the marketplace? Absolutely it is. For sure it is. And the people who design it the best are going to win. And it's going to be a good business model for them to build housing.
You said earlier that each municipality also takes maybe a different tack. I know White Rock, for instance, maybe, but they'll let you build two duplexes on that lot, but not a sixplex, or Burnaby lets you go a little higher, or you have all of these different rules, and that's where expertise comes in. And more than ever today, you need that expertise. There's just no question about it. I know that you're having an online course, which probably is extremely timely, particularly if you as an individual want to use a single family home or want to buy anything really or develop anything, you need the expertise. And I understand your course is called The New Era of Real Estate Development. Well, you couldn't call it any better. And it's available to join online, I guess, and even as a replay. And I understand that if people are interested in it, they can go to an Instagram site, and we're going to put that on the bottom of in the comments section. We will have Gary's where the course can be reviewed, and also where it is, how do we join it, and also maybe his telephone number and website. So tell us about the new era of real estate development.
How do I condense a six module course into it's like 60 seconds? Change, mm-hmm. Right? There's a lot of change that is coming. Change to our cities, change to our economy, change to our housing types, like a new product with multiplex that is being introduced, and also change in where that housing can be built. So typically, that type of multifamily housing, say townhouse, was built on busy streets. And so multiplex on a single lot, you can build these near great schools, in interior parts of communities, near parks and other amenities. Doesn't have to be in that particular geography. So we're inserting a new product into the housing spectrum. That's the first big change. Number two is the regulatory environment is changing with the really forward-thinking provincial bills on housing. The third part is some of this change is not going to be easy for people to accept. I think they would have favored or just kind of looked at a distance at provincial bills and said, oh yeah, TOAs, that makes sense. Multiplex, yeah, that makes sense. But when they start being built
on my street,
and on your street, people start thinking about it differently.
Yeah.
So that change is going to bring a lot of strain. That strain then becomes a political voice. And hoping that the housing conversation continues moving forward and we push through that. Those are the three things that I would suggest you immediately need to be aware of. I also do think, as I said earlier, we're in for an era of caution over the next year or so in our industry. And for people to just persevere, work hard, get by. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Things do turn around in our industry. Just get through this stress right now, and things will get better.
We've been there. We've been there before. I just made a speech to a large local real estate company, Home Life, and the owner of the company, we were standing in front of the group and we just talked, and he said, you know what, we went through, Ozzy's going to talk about all the seven different major crises we had. And like you said, you could go back to the 20s and God forbid we go into the 30s. But yeah. One of the things was, one of the biggest crises we had in Vancouver was the leaky condo crisis. It was the end of the world, right? And Ozzy and I, he said, we had a meeting and I was very worried. I mean, I'm running, 200 salespeople and, And he says, well, think about it. You're buying a condo that has been fixed, right? If it was leaking, it's now fixed. Any new one, you don't know what's going to happen. Keep buying, right? Remember, the prices are right. I did a show last week with Michael Campbell on the Money Talk section. And I said to them, why do we think that a good market is when five buyers wrestle each other to the ground in the living room of the seller, and then one emerges victoriously, pays $100,000 more than even once. But today, where the developer needs sales, where the realtor has time, the mortgage actually, I can get a 3.84% mortgage on a five-year term, which over a 50-year horizon is probably, there's only seven times ever that we had a five-year fixed term under 5%, right? So when you look at that, go out there and negotiate, and you may just get a great deal, because in 2 years or 3 years from now, as you said, the product will be needed, right? So is that what you teach in the course, and how an individual can best position himself to make an application at the city? Do you take them through the step? Or?
Yeah, we do. And I wish it was a process that was super simple. And so we try to give people the basic tools of how to have a complete application and the thought that needs to go into it to put your project from a planning perspective into the best positive light to be accepted.
Yeah.
The technical part of it, there's a planning part of it, there is a political part, and there is a public part. And you have to sort of, you got to balance those things. It's very hard right now to move forward with a project that is entirely 100% policy compliant. There's just not many of them out there. So there has to be.
But that's why you need an expert to guide you and saying, okay, we're not compliant here, but maybe we can offset, we can present it in such a way. Clearly, anybody that is looking at a single family lot for sure, or any kind of construction lot, would be benefiting from the course, the new era of real estate development, from somebody that's been there for 30 years. And when you look at all of the projects that you have spearheaded across several provinces, and All the government officials you must have talked about. I almost don't believe it because you don't have any gray hair. You know, I mean, usually
No, I do actually.
people that are in the, dealing with the government usually are white-haired
No,
older
there's a lot
guys. You know,
there.
but look, we know that you're very, very successful, and that anybody that would really benefit from your expertise. But you're an all-around good guy as well. I mean, when I consider how much you're interested in local communities and tell us a little bit about your nonprofit organization, the Puni Group Foundation, and why it's so important to give back to the community.
Oh, I'm so glad you're asking me this question. Yeah, I would say the journey of the foundation is something that evolved. We've always had some involvement in our community. I'm the kid of Indian immigrants. I grew up on a farm in Queensborough, and my dad was a dump truck driver. My mom was a homemaker. Our family as a whole has always been extremely hardworking. So the roots of the foundation, I would say, began from that point of we've always given back as a family because we've had to receive
Right.
help from people. And so I, for example, the Whitecaps paid for my first year of tuition when I finished high school and went to SFU. It was a great shock and surprise, but I wasn't good enough to be pro. I was good enough to be good. I had good grades and I did a lot of work in the community. Those were the criteria. So I was a recipient of financial help. So that has always stuck with me. So that's sort of the origin story of the foundation. We've always found a way to have projects that we really push to give back to a community or to a neighborhood. Most all of them do, I would say. All of them are giving something back. So fast forward, you talked about not having gray hair, but I did have a massive heart attack. It's like
Oh, really? Wow.
2019, massive heart attack, cardiac arrest, died in front of my family,
Wow.
0.1% chance of survival. They didn't think I was going to make it. I woke up out of a coma 2 days after cardiac arrest. That's a whole other podcast.
Sure.
I remember everything about dying and coming back.
Yeah.
But coming back, I doubled down on the work that we do in our community. And we are much more forward-leaning with the foundation work. We do what we can to support that next generation. So we have meal programs with daycares in hardworking neighborhoods where some of the families need help. And we have several scholarship programs to help that next generation of kids and embark on life choices and career choices that will help them succeed. We were the recipients of some accolades in our office. And
Well, I understand you even received the incredible, just recently, the King Charles III Coronation Medal, and you ranked number 10 in Vancouver Magazine on the Power 50 list. So you're doing something right, Gary.
It's quite it was quite a shock and surprise. And you being singled out like that when your team and your family is doing this type of work. But I'm everyone who receives accolades like that has to be humbled. No one thinks that they deserve it. And it's giving to people that are doing work in the community. I hope this inspires other people in real estate to be doing something similar. It doesn't have to be big, doesn't have to be grand. Just pick something that is personal to you, be nice, and help somebody.
The old story of paying it forward, right? As you said, you got it from the Whitecaps and you're paying it forward. And if everybody would do that, you know, and we, in today's world, we have an internet where everybody voices their opinions in the most negative way possible. And I was at Mayor Locke in Surrey's luncheon a day before yesterday, and she sort
Yes.
of told everybody that we should be more respectful and more appreciative, and you know, as a city. And she got a standing ovation. There's a need in all of us to maybe give forward and pass forward and do the right thing.
Mayor Locke is right. There's so much you can accomplish in this world if you just lean in with kindness.
Yeah.
If you start with that, kindness and respect.
Yeah, that's exactly her point. Gary, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I know you have a busy schedule and it was managed to grab you out of your busy
schedule.
It's
a pleasure. I'm here with the Ozzy Osbourne of real estate.
Yeah.
You're the rock star.
Yeah, I'm a legend in my own mind.
Aren't we all?
Thank you so much. And everybody that has an interest in the course, and if you have anything to do on the development side, you should really take that course, or at least come and find and buy the replay and go and take a look below. And if you're listening to this podcast, just send me a note at oz@ozbuzz.ca and I will send you the contact information. Thanks for joining us. All the best.